I want to thank you on behalf of the Codex Foundation's Board of Directors. I want to thank you all for coming. This is what's you're the stars, and we're the worker bees. And I'm really glad you guys came. And I have about a half an hour, and in this period of time, I intend to thank about half of the people that need thanking, and then the other half will have to be thanked at the end, because I will probably I won't forget their names ever, but the list is rather long. And then I would like to open it up a little bit to confusion, since we now have you here all. And if there are any really basically deep and abiding confusions, maybe we can answer your questions quickly all at once. We've been preparing for your coming for 2 years now, since January of 2005, when we decided that we would form a 501c3 foundation called the Codex Foundation to promote and preserve the fine arts of the book. We spent the first year lobbying on behalf of our forthcoming book fair, and we were in Frankfurt, we were in Oxford, we were at Wellesley, we were at Oak Knoll. The only fair that we managed to miss was Pure Mid-Atlantic, much to my chagrin. I tried to get to every conference that I could get to, but then several things intervened. But we tried to reach everybody that was already amongst us. And then in the last 3 weeks, and it was almost in a devilish rush, we tried to reach the general public through the outer rather than the inner media. And we've had advertisements in the San Francisco Chronicle, in an international magazines for bibliophiles, and on and on, but not on and on and on. We cut it a little short. I would like to thank right off the top of my head, or at the beginning, is the Bancroft Library and Dr. Charles Fallhaber for hosting us here. They are the department, or non-department, in which I have been teaching for 15 years, the hand-produced book. And they graciously gave us the faculty discount and arranged for our AV people and also our cash donors significantly. So we have, as the Codex event progressed, and as people got on board, we added on a number of our California institutions as donors, not surprisingly, Stanford University Library was very, very generous, and their director Michael Keller, and of course our board member Roberto Trujillo in the time and work. The Book Club of California was very generous in a grant that came to help support our speakers. And Gary Strong, director of libraries at University of California, Los Angeles, also provided us with a generous grant to get the ball rolling. Now, in addition to that, there are individuals who, we are named on our program and the back of our poster, and amongst them, Duke Collier, Charles Hobson, and Coase and Associates. It's a very long list of people who have contributed time, money, and energy. I certainly need to thank Jonathan Gerken, who is my full-time assistant for the last 2.5 years or 2 years, and without him I couldn't have done very much of anything at all. Now, I probably left a few people off, but I do want to, of course, thank the Board of Directors. Now, I have in front of me here an absolutely beautiful dummy book art object which Mr. David Jury is editing for and on the behalf of the Codex Foundation. And this is a book that will be forthcoming, and it is just in its infancy stages. It is a book that will document be a snapshot of our time here, and with images of books, with some of the proceedings will be transcribed and entered into it. There will be several commissioned essays, and there will be informational chapters. So this moment and this next 3 days should be heavily documented. This weighs about 7 pounds, feels like. You all have exhibitors, presses, all have in your registration packets little slips that you are supposed to fill out, and we have a photography crew going to be working round the clock beginning this afternoon and through tonight and then through tomorrow and through Thursday. So this book will eventually come out. Now, book is not paid for yet by the Codex Foundation, and so don't expect free copies. This is not a vanity publication. We don't expect you to buy a copy at one point or another. But if you can, we hope you will at some sooner or later when they're out. We have been very successful in our book fair, and our mistress of ceremonies, Susan Filter, who's sitting right in front of me, has provided at least absolute direction in terms of all of our sort of nicer needs, like, are we going to have parking? Where? Are we going to have food to eat? When? How good is the food going to be? So a considerable portion of your registration fees, you should know, has gone into your free drinks and eats. And so you should definitely drink and eat tonight. Last night's too late to do that again. And then, of course, those of you who are coming to the dinner at the very end, we will see you one last time. We have a crew consisting of captains, and the captains of the two crews are Joe Bugenthal, who is in charge of registration and in this area, and then there is Vicky Von Arks Filter, who is in charge of the ballroom. And so when you exhibitors in this afternoon have any issues or any problems, that one should seek Vicky. Vicky will be your coordinator. Now, I want to say just a little something about the mission of the Codex Foundation and how it got defined. I awoke with the idea of presenting a great marketplace. I think the most important thing that I missed in Berkeley and in San Francisco in the last 30 years, I've been practicing 30 years here in the Bay Area, has been a great marketplace. I have been to great marketplaces. I've been to the Frankfurt Book Fair. I've been to the Oxford Book Fair. I have been to great marketplaces in other kinds of arts organizations and in other kinds of professions. But I've never found a great marketplace in for this that spoke to me of a great deal of internationalism, because I was always aware, being from Missoula, that there's a big world out there. When you grow up in a small town in the middle of nowhere, you are very, very aware that there's a big world out there. When you grow up in a gigantic city where everything is right outside your door, sometimes your awareness is not quite as heightened or maybe nervous as the awareness of a young man in Montana is. So I've lusted and want up for a marketplace. So we are trying to create a marketplace for ideas, a marketplace for our books, and a marketplace for our knowledge. And I say knowledge is separate from ideas, because I think our ideas are dearly and closely held opinions that seem to accrete reason. And our knowledge is something entirely different. Our knowledge is what it is that we do with our hands that is often dumb. Often we can't speak of that knowledge. That knowledge is something that we can only do. And so the Codex Foundation wants to promote all forms of knowledge of the book as a work of art. So, to that end, we are trying to ask you over the next 2 days, 3 days, to think in terms of the future, strategies that might be worth remarking upon. The last session of our group meeting on Thursday is a panel discussion that is to be called a Raising the Bar, or the Fate of the Art. Now, my intention at that last meeting is for it to be a town meeting. I mean, we should all of us who are here now be here then. We will have experienced several days of furious eating and drinking. And you notice that we called this a symposium. And you know the meaning of the word symposium. Symposium means a drinking party. And so we are providing good California wines for that. But we're also trying to, therefore, lubricate the marketplace. And we each have to make our private contributions to the marketplace. And that meant that some of us invited our very best patrons to come, of course, fearful that our best patrons might discover another press. And therefore, our livelihood might be slightly thinned out. But we have all made this kind of leaps before and discovered that you know, what goes around comes around. And so I'm anticipating and hoping that you have all told yourselves before you got here and prepared yourselves for opening your wallets. Because if this is not a big success, will you want to come back in 2 years? We will be here. We will be willing to host you in 2 years. Would you like to come back? Would you have any suggestions for us as to how we could do it better for you? And finally, on that very only theme that is the marketplace, is that I think that now that we are here, and I can sort of feel that there's a tension, and it's not all bad, that maybe we should up the numbers a little bit. You probably came in with an idea that, well, maybe you'd spend $500. I mean, everybody. I mean, those of us who make books buy books. You know, double it, triple it while you're here if you can. And if you were thinking that you wouldn't be able to afford to buy anything, then consider trading as an option. I mean, one thing that we're always open to is, I'm a book collector, and I collect the books of the people in this room when I can. I have other collecting interests, but they don't impinge upon the book as an art object. They have intellectual objects. I have collections. I'm sure we all do. But the success and the measure of this is going to be the marketplace. And enough said about that. The idea of the book as a work of art, and in this beautifully designed preliminary cover by Mr. David Jury, we also need to raise our expectations of how much work we are willing to put in to the job of creating a dialogue that reaches outside the pre-converted. And so my idea is that, and was that, and hope we will be even more so and more directed in this direction, to involve the medias or the media that are not immediately our own. And so we, to that end, of course, we've invited ARC, a group of young people who have come out of the Circle Press in London. Some are sitting right here, and they have their podcasting video equipment. And as I understand, they're going to do a streaming video from some of what we're doing here. And we are also hopefully going to improve and expand the Codex Foundation website. Now, all of you who are here who are participating in a commercial way, if you have a website, we have tried to list it, and it's on our website, and it's not going to go away. We're going to keep it there as long as we can, and we would like to expand our website and increase our links. But most important of all, it's these public events that we want to try to perpetuate and create more. We would like to have Codex symposiums in New Haven, Connecticut, in Mexico City, in Hamburg, Germany, in Venice, Italy, in London, England, in Bogota, Colombia. We would like to have Codex symposiums all over the world. The Codex Foundation will surely outlive me. The Codex Foundation is, those of us who are on the board of directors today are only on it for a few years. There will be another generation, and more of us will have to chip in and help and provide leadership. And the idea is that we are going to create an international marketplace and a place where books and like book art object will be created and published. Collaborating with people as far away as Cornuda, Italy, the Tipoteca Italiana, whom I had a fantastic collaboration with this fall in Italy. We're opening ourselves up, I think, to collaboration from all over the world, and that's the point of this gathering. We are now just within a few minutes of beginning, and if anybody has a burning question, or even not very burning, but a comment, I would like to open it up right away to anything anybody would care to say. If there are any real troublesome questions, you know, that seem like global, like where do we go next? Well, good. I'm glad to hear that we're all settled and happy. What I'm going to do then is take a minute. We can start a few minutes early. I can be brief. I'd like to, in that case, ask Sarah Bodman if she's prepared to stand up and be introduced. Okay, here's Sarah. Now, we can go right into it. Okay, I'm going to give you a quick two-paragraph introduction. It's on our website, nothing spectacular. She is spectacular, believe me. I sought her out in England, and after I had read three books by her that she was the compiler of before I met her. And I read all three of those books and devoured them from cover to cover. Sarah Bodman is a book artist and a research fellow for artist books at the Center for Fine Print Research at the University of West England, Bristol. Now, you can imagine, when I first saw Center for Fine Print Research, I thought, oh my God, they've done it for me. I don't have to do it. What a great idea. At the Center for Fine Print Research, many aspects of book arts are explored, and from the conception and history of the artist book to creative processes and output, current developments, history of the artist book, creative processes, etc. Though these projects and collaboration through them, the CFPR aims to widen critical discourse within the book arts field. Some recent projects include Arcadia Id Est, a touring exhibition of 116 artist books on nature and the landscape, Artist Books Creative Production and Marketing, a free download publication for artists and collectors, and Bookmarks and Librarians Artist Books. Sarah is the editor of the Artist Book Yearbook, a biennial publication published by Impact Press and the Blue Notebook Journal of Artist Books. Sarah is also the author of Creating Artist Books, published by Watson Guptill. I know you can buy this in Berkeley. I've seen it on bookstores and on shelves in bookstores in Berkeley. Sarah's own artist books are regularly exhibited and held in many national and international collections, including the Tate, Victoria and Albert, Yale Center for British Art, MoMA, and the Institute of the Arts of Canberra. So, Sarah Bodman, thank you.
Hello. First of all, I'd like to say thank you very much to Peter and the Codex Foundation for organising this pretty amazing event and for inviting me to come over and talk to you about some of the things that are going on in the UK. Before I start as well, I'm going to show quite a few examples of artist books from the UK, and rather than everyone, if there's anything you're interested in, rather than trying to scribble it all down, I've actually made some sheets which have the contact details and information about all of the books I'm going to talk about. In theory, it's live on our website from now if anyone wants to download that sheet. And I've also got some photocopies of it here as well if anyone needs to have a copy of it. I'm going to talk about artist books from the UK, handmade artist books, in a variety of formats. We're not really going to talk about the fine press books so much because they're here as well. So if you want to see the fine press books, I think it's a good idea to wander around the fair. We've got Old Style, Gwres Gregnog from Wales, Incline Press, Circle Press, Old School Press, and others. So make sure you have a look at those while they're here. Right, the following talk is going to include examples of artists who've been practising their craft for over 40 years in the UK. We're going to start with some people who are more established and then show you some examples of some contemporary work, which we hope will demonstrate the continuing vitality of the artisan-made book in the UK. I'm afraid I've had to leave a lot of artists out as well because due to time constraints there just wasn't enough to put everybody in, so there is more to look at the fair than I'm going to talk about here. Okay. And I'd like to start with two artists which I think should be probably considered as national treasures in the UK, John Bentley and Ken Campbell, both individual and inspirational artists who've practised for over 30 years each. And John Bentley has been publishing under the Liver and Light Scriptorium and the Kind Red Spirits imprint since the early 70s. He says he began life as a poet who found himself at art school, the two media eventually informing and blending until the book became him. Sorry? Oh, it's working on him. Oh, okay, we're done. Okay, John Bentley says he began life as a poet who found himself at art school, the two media eventually informing and blending until the book became his primary medium. Of the 39 volumes of his Liver and Light series to date, each book has been different in size, scale and shape from the last, depending on the ideas inside. Bentley collaborates on community-based projects to engage the public in making art, and from these collaborations he has published artist books including Concerning the Poetry of Lost Things Harrow, A Book of Five Heroes and A Handful of Memories Dundee. His smaller editions of handmade works range from Yellow Moon in Brockwell Park to The Billy Man, Liver and Lights No. 9, and all of these books include his own hand-printed poetry, text and images. The artist Ken Campbell works in print, painting, sculpture and graphics and has produced over 20 beautifully executed books since 1978. Campbell embraces both traditional and more recently digital methods of production, and he writes, designs and prints his books by letterpress, etching, embossing and additional handworking. He is currently working on Wall, a book which has taken 4 years to produce, mixing letterpress, inkjet and what he calls attacks on the surface of the book page. Campbell's work was also the subject of a major retrospective show at the Yale Centre for British Art in 1998. And last April, his archive proofs, printing forms, dummy books and supporting material was donated to the Yale Centre for British Art, which also has a complete set of his published works to date. Ken Campbell says of his work, "These books, with their design structures, cradling imagery and words, scattered through the procession of their pages, break the rules of what makes a book and how a book is made. But those rules are always in this maker's mind and hand, and the form of the book is both referred to and revered. I have felt that all of my books are really one work in progress, each book a chapter, and in the first can be seen the essence of all that follows." Campbell's books have been described by Peter Townsend as darkness shot through with light, pretty much the way the world is put together. As well as individual artists making books, we have champions of the finely produced book in the UK. Emma Hill's EMH Arts was established in 1991 as the publishing imprint of Eagle Gallery in London, and in the last 12 years has gained a reputation of one of Britain's most innovative publishers of limited edition artist books. Hill has consistently supported the production of hand-printed books, often showing what would be considered uncommercial works in her gallery, and sponsoring publications of artists through the EMH Publishing Arts Scheme, a project which encourages artists and writers to work on long-term collaborations in the book format. Hiller has also worked closely with the freelance typographer and designer Neil Crawford, who set up Type AG in 1972. Crawford has collaborated with many artists and writers for EMH Arts publications as a translator and typographer to produce works for Ian Tyson, Sandy Sykes, Jane Bustin, Andrew Renton, Jane Joseph, Mel Gooding, Andrew Bick, Paul Coldwell and Anthony Rudolph. Crawford's own typographic works include this translation of Rambo's Voyages, set in Adobe Bembo. And this spread from a typographic translation of Stefan Mallarmé's and Coup d'Etat, set in Monotype Bodoni. Crawford used PhotoSet to allow variable character spacing and then made the text into line blocks to print letterpress, which accompanied a suite of four aquatints by Ian Tyson. Some recent examples of works published under the EMH Arts Publishing Scheme include The Centipede of Liturgy by Rupert Lloydell and Andrew Bick. Lloydell's text is being set by Crawford in Info Office Regular. The book is inspired by the alphabet, with each of the 26 page spreads being dedicated to a particular letter. We also have Kafka's Doll by Paul Coldwell, which includes digital prints by Paul Coldwell and text by Anthony Rudolph. This is actually at press at the moment, and Crawford has set the text in Ocean Sands Bold. An artist who's had a long relationship, commercial relationship with EMH Arts is Julia Farrer. This is Mandala, with text by Anthony Rudolph, and it was published by Farrer's imprint Kai Press in 2006. Which is represented through EMH Arts. The book was produced in a limited edition of 20, with etchings printed by the artist and letterpress printed by Phil Abel. Julia Farrow has been producing artist books since the 70s and has also collaborated with Ian Tyson, publishing under their Partworks imprint. They've produced 10 editions of books from 1995 to 1997, using a variety of media from etching, emboss, screen print, hand-cutting and painting, letterpress and woodcut. Her recent work, such as Mandala shown here, transfer geometric compositions from two to three dimensions. And as well as using traditional production media, Farrow also uses Quark and Photoshop computer programs to manipulate text and her original drawings into random and chaotic geometric forms. Over the last few years, there have been concerted efforts by designers and artists to reintroduce letterpress as a working medium for producing books as well as a tool for education. At the Centre for Fine Print Research, we have a working letterpress area for both undergraduate and master's students, where they learn the rules of type composition in order to understand how the formatting palette for computer text programs is built. Students are often surprised as the meanings of leading and font sizes all fall into place during class. In many colleges in the UK, letterpress is flourishing. As students yearn for alternatives to computer design, we have noticed a resurgence in many traditional forms of printmaking, not just letterpress. Litho, screen print and relief print are enjoyed and utilised by students who enjoy producing hand-drawn and printed images and text. Danny Flynn and Andrew Gossett, who work with Bookworks, Letterpress and Print at Middlesex University in the UK, encourage their students to fully explore the letterpress workshops, where Flynn is also running research projects which investigate new ways of working with type. This includes laser cutting letterforms out of hardwood and perspex to replace fonts where the originals are no longer available. Flynn says, "I think it's important to encourage and maintain hot metal and wood type use in particular, as it is a component of an area of printing that is easily accessible and often utilised by people communicating personally and working free from collective or commercial restraints. Whatever they are going to print and whatever you are going to read is going to have the potential to come from that refreshing other voice." David Dury, who is here at Codex, as we know, is the editor of Typographic and the head of graphic design at Colchester Institute in the UK. He's also the author of many books on typography, including the recently published Letterpress, New Applications for Traditional Skills. Jory is a champion of letterpress and typographic design in the UK and has published many editions of his own under the Fox Ash Press, including Morocco, A Desert Adventure, which is a diary of the documentary photographer Humphrey Spender on a commissioned trip to Morocco in 1934. The book is printed with both the original text from the diary and Spender's self-censored version. I'll show you a few pages from it now. Another book by Jory, In Darkest England, is based on mass observation, a project led by the anthropologist Thomas Harrison, intended to be a survey of the British working classes from 1937 to 1938. Over 900 photographs were taken by Spender, and the project continued during the Second World War as an observation of the state of public morale. In Darkest England consists of loose sheets, letterpress printed as a typographic exploration of, as Jury states, the observations of the observers observing each other. Colin Sackett is another example of an artist typographer in the UK whose work encompasses both traditional and new forms of publishing. In 2004, he published English Publishing, Writings and Readings, 1991 to 2002, which is a collection of his works over an 11-year period as a book artist, designer and printer. Sackett takes as his source material items as diverse as book indexes, ordnance survey maps, watercress labels and radio commentaries. These texts are edited and rearranged, sifted, panned and sieved, so that language comes to the surface new, raw and untarnished. Sackett works with a variety of production methods, letterpress, Adana and computer programs to publish his landscape-based text and image works. Landscape in an analytical or theoretical sense is a major part of his work, place being the basis for any book about listening, reading or direction. Christian Brett is an artist typographer who founded Brackett Press after 25 years of working with digital type. He has recently started to work with letterpress, having received great encouragement from Graham Moss and Kathy Whalen of Incline Press in the UK. He says that Brackett Press is almost exclusively driven by the typography and a heavy emphasis upon content, in particular political, social and philosophical themes. They produce small editions from 10 to 150 copies and a great deal of letterpress ephemera. Brett recently collaborated with G. Voucher for the installation and special edition book from this project, The Sound of Stones in the Glass House, in October 2006. The special artist edition documents the text featured in the exhibition and comes with a set of photographs, an envelope of seeds, a white balloon with consolatory message tag, and letterpress printed ephemera. The Sound of Stones in the Glass House is, amongst other things, a study of the organisations, both political and commercial, that have profited from the aftermath of 9/11 and the war against terror. Christian Brett is also the artist and author of Censorship by Omission and the Economics of Truth, a 10,500-word essay written in 2003 in response to the events of 9/11 and the Second Gulf War, exploring the manipulation of and by the media and the dismantling of democracy. This hand-printed, self-censored text is just decipherable. The concentration required to recognise each word and complete the sentence makes the impact of the message that much stronger. Harrington and Squares is another small private press founded in 2002 by the designer typographers Chrissy Charlton and Vicky Fullick. They specialise in small format, hand-printed, limited editions. Their aim is to bring letterpress printing and handmade graphics into contemporary use. Ada Memoir was printed using letterpress and inkjet print as a series covering subjects from girl groups in the 60s to characters in The Archers. The Golden Key is a reworked tale from the Brothers Grimm, letterpress printed and foil blocked, with the paper worked into using a variety of tools to illustrate the story. Harrington and Squires say they operate from a 1.2 metres or 288 picas wide, three stories high workshop in London. They are also indicative, alongside Bracket Press, of the growing number of small press and independent artist typographers dedicated to using both new and traditional technologies to produce engaging books. In Ireland, Coracle, directed by Erica Van Horn and Simon Cutts, has published many editions since its inception in the early 70s. They've worked with artists and writers including David Bellingham, Ian Hamilton Finley, Stuart Mills, Tom and Laurie Clark, and Colin Sackett. Coracle publish affordable and well-made artist books and critical works. This example here is Simon Cutts' A History of the Airfields of Lincolnshire 1 and 2, both letterpress printed as typographic poems descriptive of the landscape. Ignition Books is also based in Ireland and is a new venture which was established in 2005 to publish books by contemporary Irish artists and writers. They've worked with Oran Day and David Smith of Atelier and Darren Ibercane to design productions of visual text and image-based books. The Irish artist Andy McGarry has also been producing handmade artist books for many years. His images on paper are drawn by hand in Indian ink and then immersed into marbling ink, so each book within any of his editions is individual. McGarry is an established advocate of the book arts in Ireland and a co-founder of the annual Wexford Artist Book Exhibition with Dennis Collins in the early 90s. He also continues to promote the artist book through many associated events. Back in the UK, Bookworks is the largest independent publisher of artist books and related multiples. Established in 1984, they used the book form to disseminate visual art practice to as wide and diverse an audience as possible. Bookworks also published critical writing, for example, Put About, a critical anthology on independent publishing, which was edited by Maria Fusco and Ian Hunt. They also collaborate with institutions such as Tate Modern to run educational courses and symposia on contemporary independent artist publishing. Bookworks also produced small editions of handmade books and multiples in their own studio, publishing works by artists such as David Bunn, Susan Hiller and Paul Etienne Lincoln. The two examples here, on the left is Fragments of a Literary Conversation, which by Sharon Kivlin, which is letterpress printed, and Lost Volume, A Catalogue of Disasters by Cornelia Parker, which includes a hand-affected object by the artist. Emily Artinian, who's here filming, makes limited edition artist books and text-based art. She says she explores different aspects of literature and text theory. Recent works by Emily include The High Window, a film and artist book about imagining fiction. She's also one of the co-founders of the book artist group Fraction. From Ararat to Angeltown is a bilingual volume of six translated poems and stories by members of an Armenian writers group. The book's text is set in the typeface Nurum Patria, a complementary Latin-Armenian design by Hrant Patsan. This large format book at 42 by 60 centimetres includes photographs of the group's meetings in Yerevan and transcripts of the artist's discussions with the writers about contemporary issues in Armenian literature. At the University of the West of England, we're lucky enough to have well-equipped print studios where we encourage students and staff to produce editions of prints and books. Ian Chamberlain's Livre Deluxe, The Odyssey, was produced in our studios in 2004 in an edition of four. It was hand-printed by the artist using etching, blind emboss, three-dimensional collage and mixed media, and then hand-bound in leather. Odyssey utilises a solely visual narrative structure to compare the ordeal of inexperienced soldiers in World War I and II against the classical idea of the hero voyager. The hand-produced visuals in this book reinforce the mythical and historical concepts of image as narrative. We also have a new book that Ian's just finished with us, which I don't have any pictures of, but we actually have on our stand. So if you're interested in seeing that. We also have a very popular letterpress and relief print area, where Neil Boosfield, a second-year master's student, has just spent the last year hand-printing one limited edition book. The cycle describes a journey through the lives of four characters in one dysfunctional family. The endless trials of social exclusion and repeatedly bad choices in life have combined to complete the cycle. The images depict this narrative through the eyes of each family member, concentrating on developing lives of the two sons, each of whom repeat the mistakes of their father, and ultimately the choices they make for the path of their own lives. This book consists of 216 pages of 212 hand-cut engravings, with three letterpress-printed text pages which contextualise the visual story. Neil was actually sponsored by the Society of Wood Engravers to spend a year completing on this book. So they actually paid him his fees, and they've actually given him allowance so he can just spend the year working exclusively on it. There are many artists in the UK who continue to work with traditional methods of hand production, some combined with digital process. In 1999, we curated a survey exhibition called Books by Artists to explore how and if artists were working with these technologies to produce their books. One of the works featured in the exhibition, which combined both traditional and new processes, was Christine Tech's Sleepwalking Through Trees, published by the P's and Q's Press in 1999. The book takes texts from Blake, Patton, Herbert, Johnson, Drewitt and Atwood, printed alongside a series of narratives by the artist. The result was a collection of eight small books produced in relief letterpress and digital print on Zirkel and Somerset papers. Vindication, Escape from the End of Sleepover, is also by Christine Tech. Used texts from samplers taken from the Dew Collection and Mary Wollstonecraft's A Vindication of the Rights of Women. Again, this was a combination of letterpress and relief print with shinkalade strips of laser-printed text on Arsh paper with moving parts. Susan Johanknik's Geffen Press has published 30 books to date and will also have a retrospective exhibition at the University of Vermont Burlington this year. From 1997 to 2000, Johanknik curated the artist book Millennium Project, Volumes of Vulnerability with Catherine Maynell of Middlesex University, which included the work of 20 artists and toured internationally. This book by her, Modern Laundry Production, is a reformation of a 1940s trade laundry manual, which folds out as a long accordion, tumbling in the same manner as the rotating clothes. This was hand-printed in litho as an edition of 140, published by Geffen Press and Porpoise Publications London in 2001. Andrew Morrison produces his books by hand using a combination of letterpress, screen print and digital media. The two images here, Sleep in My Bed and Talk to Me, are from his book This For Me, printed with hand-cut wooden type and screen print. He says the book began life when his son tried to make him eat an unwanted piece of stale birthday cake. Eat my cake, he said, and the words stuck with me as they could be both an invitation or a command, depending on how they were phrased. The book grew as he considered other statements and images that would extend or question the simple text. He says that he thinks that narratives often have to be stumbled upon rather than sought out. He cut a number of the wooden letters, the ones on the plank rather than the end of the grain, as he wanted an open copybook style of letter to match the nature of the statements and the implied innocence of the voice. Tracy Bush works with found materials, recycling papers with painstaking methods of hand-cutting to form books and sculptural works. Her books explore the natural environment from the River Thames to native flowers and Lepidoptera. Her most recent artist book, Nine Wild Plants, compiles responses to the question, which 9 wild plants could you confidently identify? This one here, British Butterflies, is an open numbered edition, 20 of which are in existence at present. Each butterfly is hand cut from old maps of the British Isles, according to the colour of species, then interleaved with glassine papers in a hand-banked stamp album book. Bush is a meticulous artist. For the Thames PH book in 2001, she travelled by boat along the River Thames with the Environment Agency, visiting test sites where she dipped litmus paper page by page into the river water. The river journey is encapsulated by a list of locations combined with the physical traces of river water in a tiny PH book. She also produced the book River Stairs during a residency in our print studios in 2002 as a hand-printed edition of 12. Each book comprises of 8 indigo photopolymer prints on Korean paper with letterpress text, cloth bound in indigo with a silver tulle title. Steve McPherson is another meticulous artist. His visual books often take him years to complete, with him spending up to 3 months per page on them. These are all hand-worked in a variety of processes with hand-stitching, photographs, fanned objects, hand-lettering and drawings. These 2 images are from his compass diary, which he completed in 2001. McPherson is currently working on a unique book for us as part of our Regenerator project, which is reanimating discarded library books back into artist books by sending them out to artists to work on and swap with each other. Steve is reworking Elias Canetti's Auto da Fé at his own pace, which will be taken back into our collection on completion. As well as upholding traditional means of artist book and print production in our studios, we also explore new processes or old processes which can be combined with new technologies. Our master digital printer, Paul Laidler, works with artists under the Perpetual Portfolio Scheme to expand and build upon digital print for artists. We believe that digital production can be included within the hand-produced artisan remit, and that artists should utilise any tools available to them to create work. An example of the possibilities of the beauty which can be achieved in digital print is Helen Douglas's Swan Songs with Damselflies, which was published by We Productions in an edition of 30 last year. The book is a contemplative exploration of a loch and its inhabitants, unfolding its 86 pages to over 2 metres. Douglas has worked with the book format since the early 70s, publishing in collaboration with Telfer Stokes under the We Productions imprint from 1974 to 2004, where she lives on Scottish borders. Her books are hand-printed on her own offset litho press as visual-based narratives which explore nature, landscape and place. Her recent experiments with digital print have resulted in the freedom to produce larger format works such as Swan Songs in her own studio as an uninterrupted narrative. Another of her recent works, Loch, consists of 20 round vignettes of drawings of the loch's water and plants, surfaces, reeds and reflections, printed by her in edition of 500. Tom Seldon's 49 Coach Seats is one of his handmade digital print editions produced in tribute to Ed Ruscio's documentary style of artist books such as 26 Gasoline Stations. Seldon's work is based on the non-place, the unidentifiable transient situation we find ourselves in when travelling, visiting the supermarket or the motorway service station. 49 Coach Seats references Ruscio's typographic cover designs and formats and is named after the average number of seats on the UK's National Express coaches used for this particular journey. His later book, Pheasant on the Crescent and 34 Other Stories, has continued the theme of travel as it follows a decoy bird around a variety of cityscapes in the UK, USA and Republic of Korea. Tom is also the co-curator with Lucy May Schofield of Sitting Room, which is a travelling exhibition of a sitting room full of artists' books, which they co-curated for the Writing Press at Manchester Metropolitan University. The exhibition consists of 120 artists' books, which can all be handled and read in a relaxed environment of comfortable chairs and sofas, and then returned to the cabinet or table, The show is touring in Europe at the moment and will be in Mexico City this November. Other artists who have embraced digital production as a means of self-publishing their editions include Mick McGraw, who's head of printmaking at Glasgow School of Art. His most recent book, Serpentina, was published by him in August 2006. It consists of 32 double-page spreads which were digitally printed from his photographs onto Xerox Colortech paper in an edition of 100. Serpentina is the local Croatian name given to the footpath which zigzags up Mount Srd above the city of Dubrovnik. This path is used as a pilgrimage by the mothers of those killed in the war with Serbia in the early 90s. They walk barefoot up the mountain, stopping to pray each of the 13 wooden crosses at the hairpin corners of the track, which eventually lead to an altar which overlooks the city. Jackie Beattie established her own imprint of Damp Flat Books in Brighton in 1999, to produce limited edition handmade books and multiples. Damp in Ditchwater 2006 was inkjet printed as a book of detachable, heavyweight colour postcards with tissue interleaves. The book also includes a Tipton stamp and a handwritten salute. Beattie not only hand produces her own books to a very high specification, she also details the working drawings and production processes used for each of her books on her website, which is an excellent example of documenting the process of handbook making from concept to completed artwork. Also in Brighton, the long-established artist John Dillnott has used a variety of processes as technologies develop to produce his own books by hand since the early 80s. 15 English Homes is inkjet printed in an edition of 500 in 1995 and uses imagery found in advertising and food packaging as its source material. Dillnott's works parody the way the natural landscape is appropriated by the consumer industry by reusing their images to depict a view of Englishness. No overview of hand-produced artist books in the UK could be complete without the inclusion of Ron King's Circle Press, which have a stand at the book fair. Circle Press was formed in 1967 by a group of artist printmakers interested in publishing limited editions of fine books and prints. The press since that time has produced numerous artist editions of texts, poetry, posters, books and pamphlets, and continues to publish innovative artist books to date. Two examples of Circle Press hand-printed publications are The Left-Handed Punch, a collaboration between Ron King and Roy Fisher, in 1986. This was published in an edition of 80, hand-screen printed with working automata by Circle Press Publications. A Nancy Company is another collaboration between Ron King and Roy Fisher. It was produced as an edition of 120, hand-printed, screen print and letterpress with removable wire and card puppets by Circle Press Publications in 1992. King has worked with over 100 artists since establishing the Circle Press to publish limited editions and has inspired and encouraged artists from both his own and the next generation. In 2002, the Cooking the Books Ron King and Circle Press exhibition opened at Yale Centre for British Art, celebrating King's gift of the Daniel King Circle Press Archive to the Centre and the 35th year of Circle Press's existence. King's influence and generosity are widespread. Linda Landers started making books 12 years ago after Ron King noticed some of her wood engravings and asked her if she would like to make a book. She produced her first book at Circle Press, then another, The Hosting of the Side, a concertina book based on the poem by W.B. Yeats of wood engraved images with letterpress text. Ian Tyson started making books 40 years ago with the encouragement of Ron King at Circle Press and has cited him as the most generous of influences in British book art. Tyson went on to publish his own artist books under the Tetra Press imprint from 1970 to 1995, when he then founded Edit to produce more three-dimensional work. King has also inspired and employed a new generation of artists at Circle Press, Victoria Bean, Karen Blights and Sam Winston have all produced books under the Circle Press imprint in London for several years. They have now launched their own independent imprint, ARC, named in honour of and still in relation to Circle Press. Karen is here today filming and assisting. I'm going to show you two of her books from the series The Mechanical Word. This was designed and produced by Karen at Circle Press in 2005 with text by Richard Price. And the limited edition series of bookworks were all screen printed with additional working mechanical parts. I think this is a fine tribute to the legacy of Circle Press. Over the last 15 years, artists have used developments in technology such as desktop publishing and digital print to produce their own books since they became readily available from the early 90s. Books by Artists, as mentioned before, was a survey exhibition of 111 British artist books. The project examined the development of the artist book in Britain in relation to new and traditional print technologies from 89 to 99. We found that far from diminishing traditional practice, many artists were working with a combination of the two to great effect. We've published a free PDF download of text from the Books by Artists catalogue on our website, which includes free essays you can download by Deirdre Kelly from Hardware Gallery, Chris Taylor from Leeds University, Dr. Stephen Berry from the British Library, and Meg Duff from Tate Britain. There are also artist contributions on the website, including Colette Sackett and Bookworks. So I'm just going to tell you a bit about some of the projects that we run at the Centre for Fine Print Research to actually promote artist books in the UK. We publish a free book arts newsletter which delivers news and reviews on the book arts to an international audience. I think it's around 1,500 people at the moment. This is a free service which you can actually download from our website, or you can sign up to receive it in the post. But basically includes news of anything that we're doing and any news that anybody else emails in to us. We also edit and print reference publications on the arts of the book, including the Artist Book Yearbook. This was established by Tanya Posoto in 1994, and she asked us to take it over when she went on to set up the Cock Bookshop in London in 99, so we've been publishing it since then. The Artist Yearbook, confusingly, is published every 2 years and contains critical essays and free listing sections for artists and organisations. Our most recent venture is the Blue Notebook Journal for Artist Books. This is a peer-reviewed journal of essays and artist contributions that we started last October. And we've also published a free guide for book artists to help them market their work. Basically, we did this to get a bit of peace and quiet because people phone us. We were getting phone calls or emails about 5 or 6 a day saying, well, I've made this book and now I don't really know what I'm supposed to do with it. So we actually applied for some government money to run a small project where we basically tried to get the views of curators, librarians, dealers, bookshop owners, artists, and try and kind of sort out some of the problems that they had with each other. We did find that a lot of things were kind of taken for granted. A lot of artists had no idea how many people approached a collection each day, or what the collection was about, or how they prefer to be approached, and that kind of thing. So we actually interviewed a lot of people to get their different views, and we ran a survey that artists could contribute their questions to so that we could try and answer some of them for them. So we published this as a free download last summer, I think, in 2005. And we've actually had a really good response from it. So in the meantime, people have been emailing and calling saying, oh, I found out some more information, or I think you should add this. So we're actually going to update it. this summer. So if anyone has anything they would like to add or any problems they would like to include in it, then just let us know. We also show monthly exhibitions of artist books by national and international artists in our school's library. Visiting artists also give lectures on their work. For example, Ian Tyson's edit exhibition, this is his 10th anniversary, so he actually drove over from France with his books and gave a free talk in our studios in March 2005. We've also set up what we call an Artist Books Partnership Programme. It's an exhibition programme with universities, collections, schools, libraries and bookshops in North America, the UK, the Netherlands and Finland today. This actually came about because, as Peter was saying, you do go to book fairs and buy a lot of books. And over the years I seem to have bought about 450 books just by going to book fairs. And we use them a lot with the students so they can see examples of different kinds of books, but we thought it's a bit of a waste to just leave them sitting in boxes in the office. And other people had gotten in touch saying that they would like to set up programmes where they could start exhibition programmes for artists' books, so we thought, well, let's just loan them out then. So what we do is we loan artists' books from our collection on a no-fee basis to set up exhibitions and events that will promote the artist's book to a wider community. The last programme we did was initially meant to be a one-year supply, but it's turned into a two-year supply of themed artist book exhibitions to the Archi Arts Academy in the Netherlands, and which has actually been really successful and has resulted in them establishing a long-term programme of regional and international artist books events, both at their college and at a local bookshop, which they've also got involved. In 2005, we loaned 80 books from our collection to the Art of the Book collaboration at the University of Missouri. This was the second exhibition in the Art of the Book series, which was curated by Marion Ames, who's Associate Professor in the Department of Art and Art History at the University of Missouri. Proceeds from the catalogue from the exhibition create funds for an Art of the Book scholarship, which is awarded to BFA students for international travel for art studies and for the production of artist books. As part of our research over the years, we've built up contacts with curators and specialist artist book librarians from national and international collections. Visits to our centre from staff at Tate Britain and Winchester School of Art inspired us to run a project for librarians to make their own artist books. They'd all mentioned that as they spend so much of their time working amongst books, they had considered making a book themselves, but had never actually found the time to do it. So we thought we would ask them if they would like to do this, and they said yes. And then we extended an invitation to other institutional and library staff, asking them if each of them would like to produce a book for an exhibition. 45 people actually accepted the invitation, and 20 of the participants came to a one-day workshop with us where they viewed examples of books that we had in our collection, and they each made a four-hole Japanese stab-bind book with Tom Sowden. This kind of accidentally turned into the Librarians Books Project. What happened was that we said that we would archive the books and show them at our place, and then once everyone saw all the books that had been made, everyone wanted to show them in their own institution. So it actually toured as an exhibition to 5 venues in the UK, and it also came to the School of the Art Institute in Chicago. The project's fully archived on our website. We asked each librarian to make working notes as they went along, so we've documented each of the books on the website. Our travelling exhibition, Arcadia Edesse, is on artist books, nature and the landscape, is currently touring venues in the USA until August 2007, when it then returns back to Australia and then moves on to Ireland. The exhibition consists of 118 mostly hand-produced artist books, which can be handled in situ wherever possible. The 28-month tour launched in March 2005 and has been touring since. The exhibition examines the use of nature and the landscape within the format of the artist's book. This is Jane Kelly's Florilegium, which is actually on the show at the book fair here. It's on her stand, which is Epsilon. It's based on drawings at the Herbarium in Edinburgh's Botanical Gardens, and the text is from Ponge's Flora and Fauna, which was letterpress printed by Michael Caine in Paris. And Jane, I think, has also brought some of the original drawings for the book with her, if anyone wants to see them. This is another of the books from the exhibition, is Finley Taylor's Trail, which he says is hand screen printed with snail interventions. He's actually painted the text for the book with, he says it's a secret solution, but I think it was probably a sugar-based liquid of some kind. So the texts have actually eaten through, the snails have eaten the text through. But the whole book is from a bird's eye point of view on the floor. So it's a song fresh point of view as it's eating the snails. So each of the books in the exhibition, there are 118 in there, and each artist who put a book in for the exhibition, we asked them if they could explain kind of where the book, if the book was made with it, with reference to a place, how they made it, and all the addition details and working practice. So all of that is actually documented on the website as well. We also ran a one-day symposium in 2005 where we asked artists who work with the book and nature and landscape to come and do a series of talks, and three of those talks are actually up on our website, so you can download them free. And Helen Douglas's talk, Landscape Nature Book, is highly recommended. We also run a project called Bookmarks, which we aim to encourage appreciation of work in the book format by those who may not have encountered it before. We started this project in 2004, which was initially meant to be a two-part project, but people kept asking if they could contribute to it after it finished, so we carried it on, and I think it was just going to run indefinitely now. So we started in May 2004, and since that time we have distributed free artwork at 46 venues in Italy, the Netherlands. Sorry, I've lost my page. Sorry about that. We've distributed them in Italy, the Netherlands, UK, Germany, Poland, Canada, Brazil, South Korea, Cyprus, Finland, Australia, and the USA. What the project actually does is, so far we've had 150 artists contribute more than 15,000 bookmarks. Each artist hand produces a bookmark, an edition of 100, which they must sign a number, usually hand printed. These are then collated into sets. One full set is sent back to each of the contributing artists, and the rest are divided and sent in distribution boxes to participating galleries, bookstores, and libraries around the world for people to take free. Each bookmark is stamped with the current Bookmarks Project website address on the back, which directs the taker of the bookmark to the gallery section of the website. So visitors to the website can then view works by the artists and contact them via our website and email links to their site. Bookmarks 4, which was the last project last year, saw 58 artists contribute 6,100 bookmarks for distribution from September until this month. I thought you'd like. In the UK, we think there are now more opportunities than ever for artists' books. We have new book fairs and events appearing each year, and the continued growth of independent presses and specialist bookshops is quite astounding. Advances in technology have meant that the traditional and innovative can be combined by artists to publish their own artwork, and the renewed interest in the artist's book has in turn influenced a reappreciation of traditional production methods. For more information on artists, on artist books in the UK, we have provided artist links, essays, archives, projects and venues on our own website, which we have tried to design as a working resource for artists and academics. We try and publish our information, essays, books and newsletters free wherever possible on our website and in print. I just want to say, apart from any of the questions you might want to ask now, if anyone does want to find out any more about artist books in the UK or about any of the books I've mentioned, then do feel free to come and talk to us while we're here. I mean, that's what we're here for, to kind of promote them to you and you to them. So do come and talk to us on the Impact Press stand over the next few days. And that's it.
We don't have a traveling microphone.
No?
I would like to say one thing is that was really exciting. It's amazing richness and production, and they are incredibly ambitious. I mean, we in America have been, at least in my earshot, have been whining and complaining and making all kinds of noises about why aren't we doing these things, and here's someone who's been doing it right and doing it really well, for both of me. So I think you make a tremendous model as a flourishing and serious institutional attempt to bring interest to it. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Thank you.
Yep.
I'm going to ask, how many people are you busy on this thing, and what's your budget?
Budgets, yeah. it's essentially whereas it was how many people are involved in what we do and what are our budgets. As a centre, there are 11 of us working on various aspects of print. So we've got people working on reintroducing old practice, people investigating digital print and stuff. But for the artist books, I'm full-time and Tom is part-time, and our budget is however much money we can scrape together. not very much, generally. What we try and do for our publications, we do pre-publication prices for the yearbook or subscription services, and they always just, they pay for it to be printed again. I mean, in a way, we're in quite a luxurious position because we don't have to live off of the publications, otherwise I think we'd be in trouble. But actually, we can actually do it, and if we make enough money to make the next one, then we're okay, so that's something.
Are there any, does anybody in this room know of other situations, something along this line in England or Australia or Missoula?
We don't, actually, because we went to Mills College yesterday, and we were talking to the students, and they were sort of saying, what do you do, and all this stuff, and we told them, and they were like, wow, is that what it's like in Britain, that you can go there and, there are all these amazing jobs? And we were like, no, actually, no. We don't know anyone else who's doing it. So, yep. Sorry, he was first. Yep.
Who maintains your website and all the, the podcasts and the...
The website is... Who maintains our website? Yeah, is basically we've got one guy who does it, but he works on a series of websites for the faculty. So basically, we just keep pummeling him with information that he uploads.
Basically, it's through the university that
yes.
you have all this.
Yes, I mean, yeah, we couldn't do it without that kind of support, I don't think. Yeah, I'm sorry, I got three.
do you have any sense of whether there's any national influence left, or do you think we've pretty much become an international artist?
I think we've become international now, yeah. And I think probably within the last 5 to 8 years, it's really kind of, everyone's kind of like blended quite a lot. So I don't think there are any really distinct differences anymore. I think we are truly international now. Yep. Yeah, you are, yeah.
And especially, I'd like to say that the JAB Journal of Arts book, coming back into publication with JAB 25, which you're free to see, at our table, we published for 10 years, and we were back with it.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
I mean, there's plenty going on in the USA, I think. It's just the UK where it's a bit... Right at the back, yeah.
Tremendous work promoting printmaking using printing. If you care about the Rockstar as well as a book finding program, are you also supporting book?
Yeah. Yes. There aren't so many bookbinding courses. Well, there weren't so many. There are actually more coming back into being now. What happened was that a lot of the bookbinding courses kind of got affiliated to courses which were more kind of about the history of the book or book production rather than an actual craft or art to learn. But I think I know of at least 3 courses in actual bookbinding, like proper bookbinding, that are actually have been running properly since last September and are fully subscribed to. So it is kind of, it's coming back slowly. But I mean, we've got a bookbinding facility and program at our place, but it is one of those things. We've got quite a lot of small independent binderies that we use as well. So, yep. Yeah. There's a lot going on in Asia. We actually went to the book fair, there's the International Book Fair in South Korea. We went there in 2005, and that was a really nice experience because the book arts in Korea are completely different to anything that we kind of practice. There was a kind of funny situation where I think, well, for us, because it was like an artist book fair as part of a fair, that a lot of the books were just based on structure, but they had no content at all. There was nothing inside them. But they weren't actually kind of book sculptures. They were like empty books. and then they looked at all our stuff because, I mean, over there, you know, you've got like, you know, beautiful handmade paper, handmade structures and stuff. A lot of which were simply celebrating like the craft of actually structuring something, but you know, like an untitled, empty thing. And then they were looking at our books, which were kind of not really about the structure of the book, but about the content that was in it. And they were like, well, what's this? So we were both very confused. Yeah. It's not a huge college, but then again, compared to the States, it's, I think we're kind of fairly big in the UK. In our school, which is like the art school section of the university, probably got about 1,300 students. And what we have is, from the print centre where we run all of this, we're a kind of a faculty-wide service, so that any student on any program comes in and learns how to do anything that they want to do. So the students from any discipline will learn how to make artist books they want to or not. So we have websites like from fine art, printmaking, fashion, textiles, illustration, graphics, all run, they all have a module that runs with artist books.
So it sounds like you have a lot of outreach. Do you have students coming, are people coming in who are not students?
Oh yeah, loads, yeah. Yeah. We have quite a lot of visitors coming all the time, because the thing is we've always got so much going on with like different things that there's always someone coming to say, to see something or do something. And then we've got a master's program which involves printmaking and book arts. So yeah, it's quite full program.
One more question?
The book that you produced was put together to help students promote their work.
Yeah.
I'd be interested a little bit more in how you research and questions for that, and if you found out anything surprising.
Yes and yeah.
Repeat the question.
How we did the survey for the actual marketing of artist books, and if we found out anything surprising was the question. We did the survey, we did it over a year, and what we did when we started was we announced it through the newsletter that we send out, and we also took flyers to every book fair we went to, saying that these were our intentions and we'd try and answer some of these. And then we put an online survey on our website, so you could actually download the form, fill it in, and email it back to us. So we had quite a few responses, actually. I think we had, it was a few hundred artists. Not so many curators and stuff, because like, they're busy and things. So that's why we kind of interviewed more people ourselves, rather than giving them the option to ignore it. So what we thought we'd do was, as the artists sent their questions and problems back, we kind of sifted through them all and pulled out ones which we knew we could answer ourselves. Like, for a lot of them, it was things like, should they use an ISBN or not? And some people had actually applied an ISBN to an edition of 10 books and then lost 6 of them through deposit claims. So, you know, things like that you can sort out fairly easily. And then some of them are just the things of, when on the way, we went to Printabatter and we interviewed Max Schumer about, just for the update, because we're going to do it again in the summer. It's just silly things like, as an artist, or you might be making all this stuff thinking, oh yeah, that's great, and I'm going to approach this collection and I'm sure they'll buy it. But then, Max was saying they have about 100 people a week trying to sell books through the store. And I know from just conversations with other, with curators and librarians and stuff, that, people are approaching them all the time. And I don't think a lot of artists really understood that. And they would apply or send stuff that was wrong for the collection, or just send stuff which was very rude because they were just posting all this stuff to them, which they would then have to deal with getting back to them. So just, fundamental things, but things which to you and I would probably be common sense, but not to everybody. But we tried to find, while we were doing it, we thought we would try and find out the best way to actually approach collections, and that's what we found out, that there is no best way, because every single person had a different preference. So the answer was that it was an impossible question to answer. I mean, some people were saying, I prefer email contact because I don't want people phoning me all day. And then someone else would say, oh no, I don't want email because, if I don't deal with it that day, I won't get round to it. I'd rather someone called and set up an appointment. The only thing we did establish was the obvious one of never ever just turn up with a box of books expecting someone to come and see you then and buy all of them. But yeah, and it worked kind of both ways. I think a lot of the problems really were for collections was the lack of information that people give them when they buy something, especially when they're trying to catalogue things. I mean, a lot of, everyone here probably got information sheets and price lists and details on how it was made, but a lot of people just hadn't really thought about that very much. So what we did was we just kind of did a template for a sheet of the kind of basic information that would be required for someone to catalogue. And a lot of places have their own sheets that you fill in when you sell them something, you know, of the information that they need, but not everyone did that. So that was something that was quite useful, and that they could just have the information they needed rather than trying to guess, you know, when it was made, how many were made, where it was made and why it was made. So that was good. Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of what we do is kind of idea-driven. The students can, you know, they learn everything in the studio, but they can't just make something for no reason. So we do try and get people in whenever we can. And we found out it's worked quite nicely with the exhibition programme as well, because quite often artists will use it as an excuse to travel. So if they're having a show with us, they'll quite often come and do a lecture if we promise to give them tea and cake or whatever. So we've had some quite nice... We had Karen Hammer came over last September and did a really... put her show up, and we've had John Bentley, the guy from before, who had his 20th anniversary show. So we have, yeah, various people coming and telling them what's going on out in the world.
Okay, thank you. Well, I still have you. According to our schedule, we will be breaking now for lunch, and it's a nice leisurely California-style lunch until 2 p.m. For those of you who are... By the way, welcome to California. The restaurants are plenty, and they're just outside the door. I would recommend right away that you, if you have 15 or 20 minutes, we have one of America's finest bookstores just down the street called Moe's Books on Telegraph Avenue. If you have 15 minutes or 20 or an hour, and the fourth floor, the top floor of Moe's Books is rare books, artist books, and wonderful things like that. It's one of the greatest bookstores in the United States. Now, restaurants are aplenty in every direction, and we have one more thing. We have to have a word from Joe Bugenthal about the bus on Wednesday, and I'd like him to come up and
I think I can do it from here. Can you hear me? If you're going to the San Francisco Center for the Book tomorrow evening, and you want some help